Imagine living every moment with a peculiar sensation, always viewing yourself through others' eyes, measuring your soul by a world that looks on with contempt. This is what W.E.B. Du Bois called double consciousness, the internal conflict of being both American and Black in a society that treats these identities as contradictory. "One ever feels his twoonness," he writes, "two souls, two thoughts, two unreconciled strivings, two warring ideals in one dark body." Published in 1903, The Souls of Black Folk emerged as a revolutionary text that would fundamentally reshape America's understanding of race. Through a masterful blend of sociology, history, memoir, and fiction, punctuated by haunting musical notations from Negro spirituals, Du Bois articulated what he prophetically called the problem of the color line, the central challenge facing not just America, but the entire 20th century. This wasn't merely academic analysis, it was a deeply personal exploration of what it meant to live behind what he termed the veil, that invisible yet impenetrable barrier dividing America's racial worlds. After the Civil War, America faced the challenge of integrating 4 million freed slaves. The Freedmen's Bureau led this effort, providing education and support services. Their schools reached 100,000 students in the first year, while Field Order No. 15 promised freed people 40 acres and a mule along Georgia's coast. This promise failed when Congress denied funding for land purchases. The Bureau's 800,000 acres returned to former Confederate owners through amnesty proclamations. The Bureau's early termination in 1872 left its mission incomplete, enabling the rise of Jim Crow laws. In the Black Belt, the South's fertile cotton region, economic inequality persisted. Du Bois' study of Georgia's Dougherty County revealed declining plantations with occasional successful Black-owned farms. Most workers faced severe hardship, with elderly laborers earning minimal wages and accumulating no wealth. The crop lend system created new economic chains. Sharecroppers bought supplies on credit at inflated prices, using future harvests as collateral. Most fell into perpetual debt. While rare success stories existed, like Jack Delson's 650-acre farm, only 6% of Black families owned land. Many faced outright theft, exemplified by a preacher's wife who lost 700 acres to fraudulent checks. Booker T. Washington's 1895 Atlanta Compromise speech advocated for racial separation in social matters while pursuing economic cooperation. His strategy prioritized industrial education and economic self-help over political rights, earning white philanthropists support and helping establish Tuskegee Institute. W.E.B. Du Bois initially supported but later challenged Washington's approach. He criticized Washington's acceptance of segregation, identifying a triple paradox, advocating property ownership without voting rights, preaching self-respect while accepting inequality, and supporting education while undermining higher learning institutions. This debate between accommodation and protest, economic development, and political rights remains relevant to discussions of racial progress today, demonstrating how advancement requires both economic opportunity and political participation. In rural Tennessee, Du Bois discovered his calling teaching in Black communities, where education served both personal growth and collective liberation for those emerging from slavery. His classroom was modest, a log hut with plank benches and a weathered blackboard, yet his students showed remarkable eagerness to learn despite farming obligations. Unlike Washington's industrial training focus, Du Bois advocated a comprehensive approach, blending practical skills with higher education. He believed Negro colleges must maintain high standards while fostering social progress and developing leaders who could transcend prejudice. Du Bois saw different educational forms as complementary. While industrial schools like Tuskegee served their purpose, they depended on liberal arts-trained teachers. Post-Civil War, 30,000 black teachers from missionary colleges helped slash illiteracy rates and built foundations for future institutions. His vision endures. Education should develop complete human beings capable of transforming both self and society, making knowledge a tool for liberation. The Negro Church served as both religious institution and social nucleus of black American life, encompassing functions from insurance societies to employment networks. Du Bois identifies three pillars of slave religion: the preacher, the music, and the frenzy. The preacher evolved from African medicine man to community leader, blending earnestness with political acumen. The music, with its plaintive rhythms and minor cadences, emerged as America's most original artistic contribution through the crucible of slavery. Each chapter opens with Negro spiritual notation counterpointing the analytical text. These sorrow songs express the soul of a people who walked in darkness. The Fisk Jubilee Singers rose from a modest Sunday school group to international acclaim, performing these spirituals across two continents. Du Bois highlights 10 master songs that capture the slave experience, including Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen and Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Their power stems from emotional authenticity, conveying messages of trouble, exile, and longing through natural imagery of rough seas and wilderness. Through sorrow, these songs carry hope and faith in ultimate justice, their minor cadences of despair often rising to triumph, affirming that someday men will judge men by their souls and not by their skins. Christianity initially served as comfort for slaves through promises of divine justice and future freedom. When emancipation came, it appeared as divine intervention. Modern black Americans face a religious paradox between their Negro and American identities, creating painful self-consciousness that leads to either radicalism or compromise. Yet beneath these responses lies an authentic Negro spirit seeking new religious ideals. Du Bois envisions an awakening when the vigor of 10 million souls will advance toward justice. This heritage has given America three gifts: song and story to an unmelodious land, the labor that built the nation's economy, and the gift of spirit, forged through struggle and brotherhood. Would America have been America without her Negro people? Du Bois asks, underscoring these vital contributions. The problem of the 20th century is the problem of the color line. With these prophetic words, Du Bois identified civilization's central challenge, one that remains relevant today. The Souls of Black Folk endures by both diagnosing racial problems and offering a blueprint for human brotherhood that transcends racial divisions while preserving cultural identity. Du Bois challenged America's exclusively white narrative by asking, "Would America have been America without her Negro people?" This question reveals how African-American culture, labor, and spiritual values have fundamentally shaped the national character. True American identity emerges through the synthesis of diverse traditions, not racial purity. Despite confronting injustice, the book maintains hope. If somewhere in this whirl and chaos of things there dwells eternal good, pitiful yet masterful, then anon in his good time America shall rend the veil and the prison shall go free. This faith in justice sustained generations of civil rights activists. The Souls of Black Folk remains vital today, revealing how Reconstruction-era patterns persist in contemporary life. It shows how intellectual rigor, artistic expression, and moral passion can advance human liberation, while framing racial justice as central, not peripheral, to American democracy and the creation of a society where character truly matters more than color.